Texas Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 10, season 16. Congratulations, you got to the end of this season, pat yourselves on the back, have a couple of weeks off, rest, recuperate, and then come back fully batteries charged to get back into the remainder of the season. But this is a bit of a special podcast for us, folks. If you've been with us from the beginning, you've heard Ryan Champion, myself, more latterly, Jack Bengen. How long have you been with us for? 2 years? 3 years? 3 years, isn't it?
2016, I think, start of 2016, or maybe the end of 2015.
Yeah. So, and Trevor, who isn't with us this week, he's probably been with us about 2 years as well. So, there's some serious crap being spoken by all of us, some of which has questioned nationalities of drivers. I seem to remember dropping that particular bollock. That was a clud one. And then possibly one of my favourite ones was last week, was Jack Bengen's call on Timo Sunderland changing his co-driver. But we're not going to talk about that. We won't talk about that. You got enough stick on our little chatter group. Anyway, listen, Jack Bengen's with us. Hello, Jack Bengen.
Hello, 77. How you doing?
We're good. I'm Ryan Champion is with us.
Hello, I don't actually think you got to the point of saying it was 4 years. You started babbling about Jack Bengen and Trevor Atkins.
It was four. Well, it is 4 years. The question is, can we do another 4 years?
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
I can, for sure.
Yeah. Jack.
You're still young, Jack. It's Tony and myself I'm worried about, and Trevor, obviously.
Yeah. You might have to take the baton.
It's the highlight of my week.
Jack, I'll be honest with you, recently you've come back reinvigorated. There's a lot of energy in you, it has to be said.
You know why that is. He doesn't get much chance to talk about rallying anymore.
Is that what it is? Of course, yeah.
No, I reckon that's what it is.
It was a relaxing break to a certain island in the Caribbean, I think.
You've not mentioned that.
It was life-changing, apparently. Jack Bengen said on social media it was life-changing, and I'm interested to know how.
Yeah, what happened to you, Jack?
I don't think it's suitable for the podcast, to be honest.
Okay, that's fair, dude. I'm guessing Barbados was hot. Certainly, Sardinia was hot, boys. We've got Tom Williams coming up a little bit later on, who's talking about tyre wear in the little R2 cars. But we always assume, Jack, that everybody knows the results and everything else. Do we dare revisit our predictions? Should we look at who we predicted?
Yeah, sure. Okay. We always should.
Okay, Jack Bengen, you went Oit Tanak, Thierry Neuville, and Sébastien Ogier. I went with Tanak, Thierry Neuville, and Sébastien Ogier. Trev went Thierry Neuville, Tanak, and Ogier. And Ryan Champion, you text yours through, didn't you? I didn't write them on the pad. What were yours, Ryan Champion? If you say Danny Sord, I'm going to put the phone down on you now.
I would like to say I said Danny Sord. I said Oit Tanak for the win. I said a renaissance from Yari Matulatwala, which came true to the first service, anyway.
No, yeah.
It was true for Friday morning. And I can't even remember who I said the third one.
Right, I'm going to put this question out there. I'll ask you first, Jack. Right, is it shame on us that when we do these predictions, and let's be honest with you, our predictions are completely and utterly awful. I don't believe one of us has put Danny Sordo in for quite some time.
Well, it was only his second rally win, so I don't think anyone needs to be sorry for not picking him for
a rally win. But it's like 26 second places or something. So, in fairness, his podium visits, you know, are strong.
Yeah, for sure. But you look at the dominant drivers over the past few years, and it's been Thierry Neuville, Oit Tanak, and Sébastien Ogier. So that they dominate our predictions because they're the dominant drivers in the WRC.
And as we know, we're biased towards British drivers. For everybody listening overseas, you've told us plenty of times. So that's maybe why we put British drivers in more than we put Spanish drivers in, or French drivers, or Belgian drivers, or whatever other nationality, insert here.
You've had your cage rattled this week, haven't you, Ryan Champion? I can tell.
I'm just glad no one can refer to him as a tarmac specialist anymore.
Yeah. Do you know what?
Thank God that stupid thing that people say all the time, that Danny Sordo is a tarmac specialist. Thank God that can be disputed now properly with a proper stat.
Yeah. I can tell you're passionate about it because you're really close to your microphone and it's kind of popping. So I'm guessing that's little little speckles of anger that's coming out of your mouth, as we call them.
I'll go and stand in the corner and shout from the corner now.
Yeah, you can do that. You can do that. What I was going to say was, in all seriousness, that was it, and this is going to sound like a really bad injustice, and forgive me, but I think everybody will acknowledge the fact that it was an 8 loss, Jack, as opposed to a Danny win.
That's definitely how I see it. You know, I think, how many rallies can we say this about now over the past two seasons? There's been so many of them, hasn't there? The only plus side for Oyt, I guess, is that his points tally is almost double what it was at this point last year. So he's had a much stronger start to the season than he did last year. So at least he's putting points on the board. But it must be really hurtful to see those wins slipping away as they have done. He's been in a winning position so many times, and he's it's unbelievable to say it, but he's so many levels clear of Jari Mäkisalo and Chris Meek. He's just the dominant driver of the WRC at the minute, and he is getting the absolute maximum out of that car. And it's definitely an 8 loss, but
do you know what? Right, and I'll let you answer this, and then we'll get Rye's opinion on it as well. Is he getting more than the maximum out of it, and is that bringing problems?
It's possible, but I think I still think Chris is settling in a little bit. We're getting to the halfway point of the season now. You start to expect the results to come now, so it's difficult to say. I mean, Jari, I think is. It's difficult. Always difficult to evaluate Jari, isn't it? He's had a long career in the WRC and produced some really good results, but I don't believe him to be on the same sort of pace as Oyt Tanak now. And we saw when he was at Volkswagen with Sebastian Ogier that he couldn't live with him over the course of a season. And I don't think he's that caliber of driver that Oyt Tanak is, unfortunately. But I think Oyt is getting, you know, probably a little bit more out of the car, and that's, you know, maybe why he's having a little bit of trouble, because he's pushing it hard. You know, you never know. But yeah, for me, he's the dominant man at the minute. There's no one really anywhere near his level in terms of how he's performing.
Right, what would you take? What you bring to that? Do you think he's pushing a bit hard?
No, I disagree slightly. I think both Chris Meek and Jari Mäkisalo are both pushing that car very, very hard, and equally as hard. It's just Oyt Tanak is, as we've talked about, he's operating on a very high level, and he's doing it every stage consistently. I think that's the difference. I think on the odd stage, both Chris and Jari Mäkisalo are going every bit as hard in their cars, but Oyt is just doing it stage in, stage out, regardless of the conditions, almost regardless of road position, as we saw last weekend. He's been incredibly unlucky. You know, we saw it in his emotions on the stop line in Sardinia. You know, he was gutted. He lost a surefire victory. The difference is, not only has he had a better start to the year, he's leading the World Championship. So as much as, you know, he's probably sat on a beach now somewhere, still frustrated that he didn't win that rally, he is leading the World Championship, and he's arguably the fastest driver in the fastest car. So, you know, he's still got to reflect on it, been a successful first half of the year.
Jack, taking all that into account, do you think that's what's flummoxed, and I use that word because I just like the word flummoxed more than anything, but throwing Sebastian Ogier, it was a very unlike Sebastian Ogier mistake, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I think they do happen every now and again, unfortunately, for him.
I don't remember, I'll be honest with you, maybe it's just rosy-coloured spectacles, but I don't remember making mistakes like that. I really don't.
No, he does make errors, and sometimes he just gets away with them, and he's, you know, I think, I remember the Monty last year where there was three or four instances that would have, you know, that could have been rally-ending crashes that, you know, he just managed to rescue. He'd gone through fields, he'd overshot a load of corners, all sorts. But I think Finland's, he's had a couple in Finland, hasn't he? 2015 and I think it was 2015 or maybe 2016. I'll have to look that one up. But he has got an error in him every now and again. He's a rally driver and he's human at the end of the day. I think it's so harsh that if you want to pick on him for this weekend, I think that's absolutely brutal, because if you look at the level he's been performing at for the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years, he's just been incredible, and I don't think you can really pick out one error over the course of a weekend. When you see some of the errors that other drivers are making who don't get any criticism, you know, for me, I think it would be very harsh to criticise Sebastian Ogier.
No, listen, this isn't a criticism. It is far from it. It was just, you know, Trev talks about making your own luck all the time, and we constantly speak about drivers' luck on this particular podcast. Let's be honest with you, we talk about it all the time, and that perhaps was one of those moments where Sebastian Ogier normally would have had a bit of luck, where the car would have went up on two wheels and it would have carried on and wouldn't even be talking about it.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a good point. It's difficult when you're trying to analyze things. It's difficult to bring a look into it because you can't quantify luck. And you know, people say you make your own luck, or you know, stuff like that. There's loads of cliche phrases, isn't there? But in actual fact, what is luck? You can't really quantify it. So it's very difficult to do. But I think it's difficult. I think Oitanek has been fairly, you know, dominant for this first half of the season. But if you look back at last year, Thierry Neuville was on almost exactly the same number of points, maybe one or two different at this point. So I don't think Sebastian Ogier will be too worried in the sense of the points in the championship. I think he will be worried at some of the, you know, I think he struggled performance on some of the rallies, and I think he'll be looking at the Citroën team to work hard on that over this short little break we've got now, and trying to move that car forward a little bit more, because I think he's lacking in performance compared to especially the Toyota team anyway.
Right, when you've seen it, what did you think? Were you like what I've just said there? I was just thinking, this 9 out of 10 times he would have got away with that.
It's just the sheer number of corners that drivers go around in the World Rally Championship. Something has to happen occasionally, you know. It is a lot of averages, luck or no luck. And personally, I don't really like that phrase, you make your own luck. You know, I think somebody once said, you make your own odds. And I think that's a lot better way of looking at it. You can make your own odds and reduce the chance of getting bad luck, but you can't alleviate bad luck. And I mean, that one, obviously, Ogier just turned in a little bit too tightly. He clipped a wheel, put the rock and, you know, took a corner off it. And, you know, like I said, they're doing so many kilometres over the year at such high speed and such fine margins now that, you know, we talk about it week in, week out. We talk about who are the best consistently. And Ogier is still arguably the best consistently. And, you know, even he is occasionally going to make mistakes. But I think Jack's quite right. I think he is under pressure. I'm not saying that had anything to do with that particular mistake, but he's under probably more pressure than he has been for a long while. I mean, the similarities here with the system not quite working for him as there was 2 years ago with the Fiesta when he went to M Sport for the first year and he still took the championship. I think the difference is that the Toyota package is now far better. It's not perfect, as we know. There is still unreliability, but the Toyota package is far better. Tanak is in a better position now, and obviously we're seeing Hyundai now consistently perform, and we're now seeing Hyundai drivers performing as well. You know, we've said that in the past, that that Thierry Neuville hasn't necessarily had the support from his teammates. Well, he took a first and a third, his teammates, this weekend. So, you know, we're seeing them having a relatively comfortable lead in the Manufacturers' Championships. It's great to see Hyundai, you know, getting things together. And that's my point about Sebastian Ogier. He's under pressure, Citroën are under pressure, and his rivals are operating at a higher level than probably they've ever been.
Just to add to that, Tony, as well, just very quickly, last year I think the big difference was that Oitanek had, you know, lost quite a lot of points at the start of the season, and he went on that mad run in the middle of the year towards the end of the year, but he was always chasing, whereas this year he's out leading from the front with the best car. I think it's a much different thing, because last year he was having to push really hard to make sure he was winning rallies, and, you know, quite often taking, you know, he acknowledged this, quite often taking big risks to try and pull those points back and try and stay in that fight with Sebastian Ogier and with Thierry Neuville of Hyundai as well. So I think the difference this year is he's coming into the halfway point of the season leading the championship instead of you know, trailing, and we've got a load of rallies that he won last year and that he knows really well, so he's in a much better position this year, and I think that's the difference this year. Sebastian Ogier probably fancied his chances when he knew he was ahead in the championship and he just had to manage that gap, but now it's Ogier who's chasing, and he's chasing a car that's a lot quicker than his, so it's a much more difficult prospect for Sebastian Ogier to face over the second half of the season.
Boys, I am just genuinely going to put this out there. This is through no knowledge or whatever, because we don't know anything. We're just very passionate about it as well, we know. But is there a situation here that perhaps if this was a role reversal where maybe Sebastian Ogier was in a Fiesta, that M Sport can make changes a lot quicker than perhaps what Citroën can? And maybe the changes that he's looking for with that Citroën can't happen as quick as when he was at M Sport and wanted those changes to happen. And they happened very, very quickly, didn't they, Ryan?
I think if you'd ask Chris Meek, he'd agree with you, because, you know, Chris highlighted several areas of the Citroën that needed improving, that he felt made them really struggle with the car, and the improvements didn't come till last season, but it was certainly too late for him. And we saw actually Mats Østberg go well in the car a couple of times, and for whatever reason, it does seem to take Citroën a little bit of time to make the car work. And you know, we've talked about Esteban Pecolati a few times this year about his personal struggles, but you know, last weekend, I don't think so much it was a personal struggle. I think he was driving well, and on the stages where the car worked for him, he was blisteringly quick. In the other stages, he got the stage end, he'd been blown away, and you could see it in his face. You could see he'd done all he could do, and yet the car wasn't working. So the clearly is still issues with that car. We know from Sebastian Ogier's history just how good he is, and he does have an innate ability to extract the maximum from a car and to drive around some issues. But I think we can see from his team there that things are far from perfect with that machine.
We're going to stick with Sardinia for a little bit, but I kind of summed up Sardinia in my head when I seen the results and I watched the power stage and everything else, and I seen where all the runners and riders ended up, you know, the three protagonists, as it were. I think it was a bad weekend for all of them, but they all kind of got away with it to some degree. Jack?
Yeah, you could say that. Obviously, Oit was the worst off, because he would have been going in with a much bigger championship lead to the next couple of rounds, so he was definitely the biggest loser. But yeah, it could have been a lot worse, I think, for the top three, like you said, and it's going to be interesting to see how they all rebound from it now. We've got some big rallies coming up, some proper balls on the line rallies where the drivers are going to make the difference, so it's going to be interesting to see how they all rebound from that. But they know they're all chasing Oit Tanak, so he's got a target on his back.
Right, this break, you know, I've seen pictures, I think, today on social media of Lappi still testing with Citroën and stuff like that. Is this the case where, you know, it's a break, but it's not really a break, and maybe some of the junior drivers are out getting kilometres on the car?
Well, there's certainly be somebody testing every one of the cars. I mean, I'm sure, like you said, some of the drivers will be taking a well-earned break, but somebody will be driving for each of the manufacturers. And as I think was pointed out, you know, Hyundai had a car in Finland last weekend, they had a car in France, as well as winning the rally in Sardinia. Hyundai are getting incredible mileage on their car currently. And yeah, for sure, all the teams will be out testing. So it's a break from competition, and like I said, I'm sure the frontline drivers will be having a bit of a holiday. I think we saw Oit Tanak flying off in a private jet somewhere on social media. I think Matthew was in Rome or so, and so some of the drivers certainly enjoying the break, but the teams won't be. And as we've just said, the fight this year is it's so crucial, and it's such a important part of the season that the teams are going to be working very, very hard to either make up a gap or for somebody like Toyota, where they've got the performance, but they still need a bit more reliability. So, it'll never stop.
Jack, I found it quite interesting. I've read a couple of reports and roundups and stuff of how the rally finished, and one or two of them left me slightly confused, to be honest with you, with regards to, you know, Oit effectively crashing out as opposed to having a problem. That was one that I read, which completely threw me, and managed to nurse it back and things like that. But we have heard things, and there's things being said with regards to, obviously, you know, Tommy apologising to his drivers, specifically to Oit, you know, for these issues and things that he is having. Do we think these types of issues would perhaps push Oit to look for pastures new? Do you really think it'll come to that?
Well, I tweeted exactly that last week when I saw Akio Toyoda had apologised personally to Oit Tanak, which I thought was quite a big deal. You know, the chairman of the company actually coming out and saying that he was, he was there on the event and, you know, felt the emotion that Oit had experienced. But it's a difficult one, because what we've just discussed is that he's basically had a great first half of the season, even if he doesn't feel that way. Some of the reliability issues kind of put a bit of a dampener on it, don't they? But when you look at the points, he's much better off than where he was last year, almost double the amount of points he had last year, and he looks like he's heading towards the first World Rally Championship. So at the minute, I think no, he's probably not looking to leave Toyota. But I think it's an interesting period, because we're coming up to that spell where he won all those rallies last year, and if we start to see any reliability issues there, then it's difficult. I think, you know, he could start looking elsewhere, but at the minute the Toyota is the best package, and I'd be interested to hear what Rye thinks about this, because obviously Rye's been in situations where he's had to pick cars and things like that, and you know, what the driver actually thinks, because obviously you've got to balance pure performance with reliability, and at the minute Hoyt's kind of just teetering on the brink there. It's just about acceptable, but we've seen how frail the Toyota can be, so it's really going to be interesting for the next few months to see what Hoyt decides to do.
Rye?
Well, thanks, Jack, for bigging me up, but I'm not sure I ever had a choice in what I draw.
Well, if you...
Yeah,
I was just going to say, if we go on to your way, there's the Maestro or the Subaru. The Subaru, that's it. No, but in all seriousness, you know, from the point of view of obviously from the technical side of things, you know, to me, I think everybody's spiritual home as a driver, I think we spoke about this before, and we're not just saying this to big up M Sport, but there's a lot of love, I think, from the drivers who've gone through the M Sport system, as it were. But, you know, the money that's getting spent by Toyota and the money that's clearly being spent by Hyundai is far eclipses what M Sport and maybe what Citroen are doing. You know, we don't know that, but we can only guess at what Hyundai and Toyota are doing at the moment. But the only other option, surely, finance wise, would be Hyundai. That would be the only place, surely.
Yeah, I don't see it going anywhere. Like you said, I mean, well, all three of the top line drivers obviously have been through M Sport now, but as much as M Sport might be put into, to get another top line driver in there, I mean, Tanak is really the undisputed number one at Toyota. They've got, I don't know about the budget comparison between Hyundai and Toyota, but Toyota have got more than enough money to get the job done, put it that way. They've got a fantastic budget. They've obviously got great facilities. They're producing a very fast car. We know the engine's good. We know the aero's good. Yes, they've got some reliability issues, but they're leading the world championship in the fastest car. Why would you go anywhere else? So, like you said, Hyundai, yeah, you could argue that they're probably attractive as well. But again, they've got Thierry Neuville as an undisputed number one driver, and Neuville isn't going to go anywhere else. So I can't see Oit Tanak moving for next year, honestly. And if you are in a seat at Toyota or you are in a seat at Hyundai, I'm sure you can see what's going on around you and the facilities that both those teams have. And I think that's what is quite nice about Hyundai. You know, again, we've mentioned it, but Dharma coming in there and really shaking things up. And Hyundai are forced to be reckoned with that, which is brilliant, because we've got two big hitters going head-to-head. Like you said, I don't think Citroen probably have the budget to compete. And, you know, we heard Pierre Boudard complaining in the media about his rival teams going off and doing national events. Now that the latest rally cars are allowed to do that. And Citroen wouldn't be complaining about that if they had the budget to do it themselves, because they would be. And I think we're seeing with the two-car team that you know, if they had the budget to run three cars, surely they would. So I think we are certainly seeing Citroen under pressure and the two big players going head-to-head. And I think that's all credit to M Sport, because we know that, yes, they've got support from Ford, but they haven't got a big budget, and yet the car is clearly still very competitive, as we saw last weekend with a fantastic performance from Thierry Neuville.
All that said, my fear, Jack, is if we don't have a performance Citroen, it will be the disappearance of Citroen, which I think will be incredibly sad as one of the two that stuck around to effectively, and I still maintain this in my eyes, save the WRC as we know it today.
Yeah, it's always sad when you see manufacturers drop out, but it's unfortunately part of the cycle of sport. You know, we've seen so many big manufacturers come in and leave over the course of the history of the WRC, haven't we? You know, obviously the more famous ones recently being like Subaru and Mitsubishi. It's always sad to see manufacturers go, and at the time it always feels like the end of the world, but quite often, you know, in most cases it's a bit of a rejuvenation. Sometimes there's a period where you've only got one or two manufacturers and the championship doesn't do so well, but then a new set of rules come along and you know, usually attract a few manufacturers back in. So it'd be interesting to see, especially with the, you know, the announcement of the hybrid rules that are coming up, what, you know, what the manufacturing interest is going to be like in the WRC over the next few years.
As you've mentioned it, Jack, the hybrid rules, which have been mentioned, obviously there was a World Motorsport Council meeting, I think, was it last week?
Yep.
Just educate us a little bit on what came out from that.
So there's going to be a return to a control tyre for the WRC, which is not Michelin. Happened since 2010, I think, when Pirelli had a three-year deal, was it?
Yeah.
From the top of my head. And then, so we'll have a 2021 to 2024, there'll be a tyre tender. So you joked it'll be Michelin. But personally, opinion-wise on that one, not really sure. I think quite often if you put tenders out for things in reduce the competition, then you allow that manufacturer to control the price, and it can often lead to prices actually going up rather than coming down, which is usually the aim of keeping the same manufacturer or brand, however you want to refer to the tyre manufacturer. And then with the hybrid rules, they'll be introduced, and there'll be spec parts. It'll be like a spec hybrid system, basically. So I think it's fantastic that from what I read, quite often give the lawmakers a kick in for some of the stuff that they do, and usually quite rightly. But I think what they're planning for the WRC, for me, is perfect, because it allows the hybrid element that manufacturers want in the cars. It means in the cities and things like that, they'll be running on electric, which is obviously great for the environment. And on the stages, eventually, probably not in the first year, but probably in the second, third year, we'll get some sort of performance boost in the hybrid as well. And we're not going to have, you know, silent electric rally cars going down stages. So for me, it's a perfect balance of hopefully attracting more manufacturers in by opening up to that hybrid technology that they're all using, while also maintaining a level playing field by introducing a spec system rather than allowing the manufacturers to develop their own, which will just result in a spending war and we'll have all sorts of mad stuff going on. So I think really sensible from what I've seen.
Tyres was something that came up, which you did an interview on the other week with regards to the Australian Rally Championship. But just going on from what Jack said there, I flippantly said, well, it's Michelin. Anyway, it may not be, of course, the last time we had a control tyre, it was Pirelli. Your take on the WRC going to a control tyre, is this just a financial thing for you?
Well, I think Jack has explained the situation well. I mean, when one manufacturer is the sole supplier, obviously they've got complete control of the market, and then they obviously will force all the teams to pay for the tyres. But the difference is with WRC, I guess, if you do have two or three players in there, you know, you could come to a position of a tyre war very quickly, because the budgets are there, where the tyre manufacturers are competing against each other, just like the car manufacturers are. And, you know, it can ultimately become very expensive. And I guess one of the concerns is that inherently hybrid world rally cars will add to the cost. So I guess it's one way of just ensuring that there's at least a level playing field there. You know, at least it's controlling the cost of tyres and controlling the development of tyres as well. So I think it's probably a way of taking more of the uncertainties out of it, because inherently hybrids are not going to be cheap. Having said that, it is necessary. You know, I saw a couple of tweets or comments on social media saying, oh, it's pointless technology, none of us are interested in. Well, I'm sorry, whether you're a petrol head or not, electric is coming, hybrid is already here. And if we want to keep manufacturers involved in the World Rally Championship, the regulations have to be relevant to those manufacturers. And I think all credit in what they've done, as Jack said, it's a nice compromise. It gives the manufacturers the ability to build hybrid cars that, as we just said, they can use electric energy on road sections and cities, so they run completely on electric. And then eventually we'll get a power boost as well. But ultimately, for the foreseeable future, we've still got the internal combustion engine to provide the sound and the spectacle that, you know, that we used to see from rally cars. So I think it is the best compromise that anybody could have come up with for, like I said, the foreseeable future.
There you go, boys. There you go. We're pretty much done now with regards to Sardinia. I just want to do a roundup of the classes as well. It was Cali Rovanpera won the pro section, right? You'll be pleased to know.
Pleased to know there's a pro section, or just pleased that he won it.
Well, just please that there's a pro section, really. I know you've got a great love for WRC2 Pro, and I thought you of all people would really appreciate it. Just saying.
Yeah, but very pleased for him. We've touched on this before, but Yankee Pepe did a great job as well, though. He pushed him all the way, so he hasn't done so many WRC rallies recently, but again, was very fast as Cali's teammate.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Unfortunately, Gus signed off with the old R5. He had some problems. He got fourth in pro for what it was worth. We'll be out in the new car in the next time he's out in WRC 2. Jan Solans won the junior section. I say we've got Tom Williams coming up a little bit later on. I tell you what, boys, obviously that bit's already been recorded and you don't hear it, but Tom was saying that basically, because of the way the stages were, it was very hot, but goes without saying, but there was a lot of single runs in the end, and the stages were not half as rough, right, as what he was expecting, and their whole strategy kind of went out the window.
But having said that, he did haul the sump, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, and he tells the story, bless him. So stay tuned for that one, folks. The story, you know, what he had to do to try and, you know, the sump guard actually wasn't broken. So the sump guard was completely intact, yet the sump was still hauled. So
yeah.
So give him a break, right?
No, but yeah. I'm just saying, you know, for anybody who watched the power stage, you could see just how rough that final stage was, how rough and how rutted, and it's, you know, in a as you know, Tony, even from national events, it is hard to drive a relatively low power front wheel drive car in those big ruts. But even in the World Rally cars, I mean, I sat with Chris Meeting in a Citroen a couple of years ago, and that's what surprised me, was how aggressive Chris was in the ruts, you know, really using them just like a motocross bike, you know, to really increase the speed around the corner, actually going almost half a gear up into the corner of what you would do if there was no ruts there. So, you know, that's how aggressively they're hitting these ruts. But as we saw on the power stage, if you hit them too hard and you pop out of them, then suddenly you can lose seconds or even go off the wall.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Boys, have we got anything else we want to touch upon on Sardinia?
No, all good.
Are you good, Ryan Champion? Are you good?
I'm good. At least the rally avoided the locusts that apparently have ravaged the farmland of Sardinia. So at least it didn't get involved in the rally.
There you go. Thanks for that, Ryan. I'll be honest with you. If I would have put my house on anything you were going to say, then it wouldn't have been that. it has to be said. We've got some Gary Boyd facts, which normally we do at the top, but I'd like to try and move it around a little bit now. Have you got any other businesses, by the way, for this week, boys?
Yep.
Yes.
You sounded like you thought, no, I haven't, but I'll make something up. Right. This,
well, that's normally what we do anyway.
It's not high school,
when we're actually together doing this.
Right. Are you ready? This is Gary Boyd. A possible discussion topic. Was Sardinia 2019 the greatest escape of Sebastian Houdini OJ's career so far? Off on shakedown, first set of handcuffs. I don't know where these handcuffs come in, by the way, but anyway, we'll... suspension damage on Friday, set of ankle cuffs. It's getting kinkier. Audience distracting tactics on Saturday and Sunday, including broken rear suspension on Saturday, put on and tighten straight jacket. Oh, finished 1 hour 22 minutes behind the winner, but then right in front of our eyes, he miraculously escaped the weekend, just 4 points off the championship lead, and now not needing to sweep in Finland. The great Harry Houdini would have been impressed. There you go. We kind of talked about that before, didn't we? Of kind of getting away with stuff, but there you go. That was I can see where he went now with the Houdini thing. I was just slightly troubled by the handcuffs at one point, that's all. Right, Jack Benyon, can I have your any other business?
You can. I'm guessing, well, I know we've got Killian Duffy coming up to talk about Donegal, so I won't go into too much detail generally, because I imagine he's going to do a bit of the runners and riders type thing and talk about the main people doing the event.
We've done some bits and pieces on it, but Jack, this is your moment. Well, cue Susan Boyle.
I'll not be too specific about the event, and I'll let Killian take that over, because what he does is fantastic, and it'll be great that you can watch all the stage ends and stuff via his platform on Facebook. So well done, Killian, for all the stuff you're doing. But I'm just really looking forward to seeing Ken Block in the Escort Cosworth. I think it's going to be mental to see that thing going around.
Sorry, if I can just interject, have you seen quite a cruel thing that's going around on social media today?
I don't think I have. I've been travelling today,
too. It was a bit tongue-in-cheek, to be fair. Somebody tweeted Paddy Power and said, what odds can you offer on Ken Block completing the first stage? And Paddy Power tweeted back, no, we can't offer odds on that.
Wow. Paddy Power have done him no favours there, have they?
No, they haven't. They haven't, no. In fairness.
Or is it just that they can't offer any odds?
Well, I think that's probably what really happened, but somebody took it and put a twist on it, as you can well imagine. So, Jack, sorry, I interrupted your any other business.
No, it's fine. It wasn't particularly detailed on it. It was just I'm actually at the French Grand Prix, and I'd much rather be in Donegal. Very much like to see that Escort Cosworth in action. It's a bit of a souped-up version of the old Escort Cosworth that he had burnt in that rally in America. So good to see him kind of build on a platform and actually I doubt he's taken the pen and paper, but they've actually torn up the form book there and really designed a really cool looking car. And it's not quite it's not your traditionalist Escort Cosworth, but it'll look mega on stage and it'll sound ace. And I know the Irish will love having Ken out there. And he also got to test the new R5 Fiesta, which he was very impressive as well. So be interested to see what happens there.
That Escort Cosworth, I am led to believe, before it went over to Ken, lived in Liverpool for quite some time, believe it or not, and it used to do the promenade stages quite regularly.
Very good.
Yeah, it was red and white MGR. It was kind of done in the old Bastos colours.
Yeah, I've seen it hitting some cones.
Yeah, there you go. MGR garages or something like that, I think it was, but there you go. So that's what I'm led to believe. By all means, if someone wants to put me straight, they can. Ryan Champion.
Well, a couple of things. Just on that, Craig Green going to Donegal in a World Rally car this weekend rather than an R5 car. If for anybody who's not so familiar with Donegal, and if you're on Twitter, just have a look at his Twitter today, because he tweeted about a famous garage on route on one of the stages. Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about, that's a good reason to click on it, because there's a famous garage on stage on a Donegal rally. Why is the garage famous? Click on his link and you'll find out. But Craig Green, a busy man, so he's doing Donegal this weekend in a WRC car, and then next weekend he goes over to Belgium and he's car 2 in Ypres in the Bernard Munster Polo. So fantastic entry for Ypres once again. We always expect that. I can't even remember how many R5 cars there are, but the R5's just going on and on and on until you come to a fleet of a Porsche GT3, so incredible to spectate on Ypres for anybody who's going. Also back for another attempt is Freddie Lykes. So 11 times winner Freddie Lykes is back doing Ypres to try and take a 12th win. I think he might have his work cut out this year, but it'll be good to see him trying. And he's co-driven by Peter Schillen, who's also won the rally as a driver. Now, when was the last time, and Gary Boyd can get onto this, when was the last time an international winning driver co-drove for another international winning driver on the rally they both won?
I don't know.
Has it ever happened?
Well, he co-drove Kevin Abring a couple of years ago, and Kevin Abring won. So they wouldn't have been winners together at that point. They wouldn't have won together at that point. So it wouldn't actually fulfil your stat perfectly. But they did. They did compete together, and Peter did co-drove for Kevin Abring in the Peugeot.
I do remember, yeah. Has it ever happened anywhere else then? There's a question.
Don't know. Well, we know a man who probably will know, and he'll come back to us. But thank you, Ryan Champion, for taking my only business, because my only business was on Ypres, and it was about the Ypres entry. But there you go. There you go.
I don't think we mentioned Nerville and Bouffier.
Have we No, we, well, Thierry Neuville's doing, is it the classic section where there's, I think there's half a dozen cars, is it? Or
it's called Rally Masters, isn't it? Pro Rally Masters. It's a new event for this year. And they're running Bouffier and Neuville in current cars. So it's going to be mega for the Ypres fans to see some proper 17-spec cars or 19-spec cars as they are now.
But is Bouffier in a current spec world car then? I thought he was in the older shape.
We might be wrong there then, but I thought he was in the newer car. But yeah, I might be wrong on that one, Tony. But I'm sure Neuville's in the current Hyundai anyway, so there'll be at least one
separate
car there.
I'm sure there is. And also you've got Eric Kimmeli in the brand new...
debuting. Yeah, there you go. There you go.
And Bruno Thierry is in...
I know. In a Corsa?
Yeah. It's not a Corsa, it's a Nova. Let's sort this out on Absolute Rally right now. That is not a Corsa.
It's not a Nova. If it's in Belgium, it's a Corsa.
It's a Corsa, yeah.
But it's not, though. It's a Nova.
It's a Corsa.
No, but it's a Nova.
It's no... No,
it's if, not. If it looks like an Nova, it drives like an Nova, it's an Nova.
Now, as soon as you go over the water, and as soon as you move the steering wheel to the opposite side, it's definitely a Corsa.
I don't care what they want to call it.
But the steering wheel was on the right-hand side, it's still a Corsa.
No, I agree.
Right, I need to do the competition win, by the way, boys. What everybody's been waiting for. So, right.
All people have listened to this whole podcast just waiting to know if they've won the competition. They don't care about anything we talked about. Just desperately want to know if they've won a mug.
Ryan Champion, of course, got this pretty much straight away. I'm gonna read it out. The first one, Ryan Champion. What's the first car?
Oh, I can't even remember that.
You can't even remember the Sting, can you? It was a Ford Escort.
No. Is that long ago?
I know.
Can't remember what order,
Ford Escort. An Audi Quattro and a Metro 6R4. And the link was, Ryan Champion?
Malcolm Wilson.
There you go, folks. I'm not going to read out all the right answers, but congratulations, all the right answers. You're effectively going to bankrupt Kielder through buying mugs. but we've got loads of right answers. We got one or two dodgy ones, but in all seriousness, everybody pretty much nailed it very, very early on. The winners, we will be sorting out over the next couple of weeks. I have seen the design of the mug. As I say, it was kind of finalized about 2 days ago, so they'll be going into production, so they'll be going out probably be about three weeks or something like that, maybe a month. But if you gave the correct answer, all that information are going to be forwarded over to the guys who distribute them for us, and they will go out. Boys, thank you. I think Brian Champion, I think you've got the most appearances in for this season, so well done you. Go missing for a few. Jack Benyon's got the lowest amount of appearances this season, I think.
Have you not got the highest amount of appearances?
I'm a given, though, aren't I? That's the unfortunate. You get me whether you want me or not. So it kind of goes in order of co-hosts. So you're the highest. I think Trev's second, and Jack Benyon was slacking all the way down to third place. But I will say this, Jack, when you have been on this particular season, the vigour and enthusiasm you had is... It's like a teenager finding babe station. That's the only way I can describe it. It's there and it's constant, and thank you for that.
You're very welcome. It's been a pleasure.
There you go. In every sense of the word. Folks, these boys are now going to go off. Brian Champion's on his way to Wales. Not as exotic as where he's normally going.
Yeah, why wasn't that your any other business?
Yeah, why wasn't that any other business, Brian Champion? I've just realised you're going your way to Bradley still, Rally.
Well, it might be my any other business when we come back. But anyway, I am on my way to Wales to do a rally. Well, to test, first, then to do a rally.
Okay, there you go. We'll have a safe one.
In the wrong seat, that's the unfortunate thing.
In the wrong seat. In a Porsche, in the passenger seat.
I can't imagine anything more terrifying than having Ryan Champion as a co-driver.
I'll be honest, I can't imagine it more terrifying than taking a Porsche on gravel. But I know that's just common. That's meat and drink to Ryan Champion. But to me, no, petrifying. Jack Benyon, you're in France. You're there for GP2. You've got a couple of weeks off from us now. What are you going to do with those couple of weeks off, Jack?
We've got back to back races, so I go to Austria next week, and then I'll have a weekend off after that. So I'll be hopefully I had a weekend off, and then I'll be back ready to come back with a load of vigour and enthusiasm, as you suggested earlier.
good stuff. Thanks, boys. Folks, we're going to go to a little break. As I say, we've got Killian Duffy coming up to talk all about Donegal, and then we've got the Kiel the Young Guns to finish off the podcast for this particular season.
This is Absolute Rally with Kielder. Whether it's the car, the service, the tools, the mechanics matter.
There's 15 more seconds to fill.
That's it, Tony. Car sounds?
And welcome back to Absolute Rally. Obviously, we spoke about all things WRC, the top of the programme, but I wanted to get to an event which sends shivers down the spine the moment you mention the words. You only have to say the title and everybody gets a little bit giddy. It's an event based at Letterkenny. It's Donegal International Rally, and there's no better man to get on and talk to as who normally comes on. He doesn't come on half as much as what he should do, but we'll get him on a little bit more. Killian Duffy, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Thanks, Tony. It's great to be back on again. Thanks very much.
It's exciting, right? And I think we spoke last time about the Craig Breen effect on the Irish Tarmac series. Now, Craig's took a step away from scoring points on this event. Maybe if you could explain to perhaps some of our overseas listeners of why Craig won't be able to score points on this one.
So the Tarmac Championship that runs over most two-day rallies in Ireland, you can only score points and win the championship in an R5 car. But the events within the championship, you can still win them overall in a WRC car, but you can't score points towards your Tarmac Championship. So if you want a chance of, I suppose, winning the rally, and there's other guys going in WRC cars, then really you have to go in a WRC car, but then you don't get points towards your championship.
Why has Craig made this decision?
I think it just shows, you know, as you're saying, shivers down your spine. I mean, it's the absolute top level of Irish rallying, Donegal is. Everyone wants to win it. Everyone wants their name there. You know, there's so many famous names on the trophy. It's like a three-day event. It's the same length as a WRC event or pretty close. And it's just the prestige of it. It's such an incredibly difficult event to win. Some people have tried for years and never done it. Some people have, you know, won it several times. Not many, though. And I suppose Craig just wants to add it to his trophy cabinet. And, he wouldn't have done it in an R5 car. No way. He wouldn't race the guys in WRC cars, Donna Kelly, Declan Boyle. I mean, there's loads more guys there in World cars. And, you know, realistically, the stage is a lot of power stages, we'll say, you know, big drags uphill and wide roads and that. So, like, the R5 car is going to struggle against WRC car. So if he wants a name on the trophy, he had to join them in a WRC car.
I guess to me, and again, this is it's not as much a Craig loving. We're all going to talk about other stuff, but this to me brings out the fanboy element of Craig and what these events do genuinely mean to him. As you say, Donegal is one of those events, and you just know when you speak to Craig, he's a fan, and fans want to win those rallies. Yeah.
He is. He's like, we'll say, an anorak as such, because I'd say Craig has as much knowledge about clubman rallying and Irish rallying as anybody else out there, but he just happens to be, a professional driver. Well, he was certainly last year in the WRC, and the way the WRC is shaping up this year, I would say he could be back in it next year.
With regards to the rest of the runners and riders, obviously the ones who are desperately trying to score points for what's panning out to be a very, very interesting Irish Tarmac series. It went through a little bit of a dip, I think it's fair to say, a couple of years back, but we are back now with a vengeance, with various shapes and sizes of R5 cars, aren't we?
Yeah, I know, it's great. There's a great lineup. Like, even if you look at the lineup this weekend, I mean, okay, Sam Moffat's got in a WRC car, but his brother Josh is actually out in a PCRS Hyundai this weekend in Donegal. He's trying it out. You have Callum Devine, you have Alistair Fisher. Okay, Desi Henry's in a WRC car as well. He's not going to be there in the mix. Manus Kelly won the event, three in a row. So there's lots of guys there. There's going to be great racing. There's nearly every mark of R5 car. But I would say, at the top end of things, I would say Alistair Fisher, Callum Devine are going to be the R5 car men to beat this weekend.
Callum, of course, a young man. And one name I was really disappointed we didn't see, and I thought it might have come about. He did some fantastic things in a modified car. He's done some fantastic things, of course, in an R2 car. And he did some fantastic things on the sporadic, is probably the best way of putting it. Rob Duggan, yeah, I nearly said Robert Barrable, yeah. But Rob Duggan. I was really hoping we were going to see him out this weekend.
Yeah, I would love to have seen Rob. Like, if people remember or not, but Brino was the first stage in Donegal last year. First stage in R5 car, and he was actually the fastest R5 car on the stage. And even when we were covering the event on Facebook Live, even his language and his reaction was absolutely incredible. It was pure gold. He just couldn't believe it. He was like a child that just after opening 10 presents at Christmas. He was just like on a different planet of high. And it was great to capture that moment, but it certainly showed the talent that Rob Duggan has. I think he ended up, he was knocking second or third there all weekend after that, but like a fantastic performance. It would have been fantastic to see him up there, but I'm sure budget was probably not there to do it.
Yeah, very much so. Now, you mentioned before the event length, pretty much 3 days. Just kind of take us through, I suppose, the roller coaster that these guys are going to go on.
Okay, so the roller coaster basically starts as recce started last weekend. Now, anyone can pick 3 days to recce. Normally, it wouldn't take you 3 days. 2 days is enough. Everyone's allowed 3 passes of each stage. In total, there is three stages twice on Friday, 4 stages twice on Saturday, and 3 stages twice on a Sunday. So basically, tomorrow morning it starts off with the driver's briefing. Now, the driver's briefing is like no other. It's held in a theatre in Letterkenny, and it has videos, and it's just really gets the blood pumping in everyone's system, and really, you know, makes such a big deal of the event, and you really know you're part of something big. All the cars are parked out the front of the theatre, and like even going to Letterkenny for the weekend, it's like going to a festival. It's just crazy. Like, I'm on the way up here from up the west coast from Mayo up to Donegal now, and there's streams of traffic passing me here already going up, of spectators and fans. So the cars proceed then at just around 12 o'clock tomorrow out to the Burt area, which is like the Derry side of Letterkenny. They do 3 stages twice. Now, these stages have been used in the past in the Donegal Harvest and also in the Donegal International, but they haven't been used for several years. So it's sort of new territory, and we'll open things up a bit. Particularly the first stage is quite bumpy and fast and committed. I think there'll be a good gap between the times there, whereas the first stage last year, there wasn't a huge amount of time in it. So it's nice to have a new Friday as such starting this weekend. Then Saturday morning, they start off with a stage called Garton. Garton was ran last year, but it was actually in the reverse. It is a really roller coaster stage. Loads of crests and jumps, sort of wide road, very, very committed. A lot of Top Gear stuff in it, but it's a fantastic stage. Then from Garton, then they go on. Then they have I think it's Karen Hill after that, off the top of my head. And they go into Glen Village after Garton. Glen Village then is a really fast, committed stage. It's identical to last year, but it was ran as the last stage of the rally last year. Then in the afternoon loop, they do the famous Knockalla, and then they do Cairn Hill after that, which is a mixed match of last year. Knockalla is almost identical to last year. There's just a chicane added in that wasn't there last year where Robert Barbell had his accident. That's where the chicane was added. Then Sunday is Fannet Head, a classic, tough, demanding stage, one of the toughest stages in the country. It's incredibly difficult, but it's identical to last year. So a lot of guys are going to have a lot of knowledge of it. Now, weather is always a big thing up there in the peninsula, and guessing tyre choice is not always the easiest. Then after that, they do Atlantic Drive. Atlantic Drive is identical to last year. So Sunday, 2/3 of Sunday is the same as last year. And then the big one then on Sunday, which is the last stage, is Port Lake. It's almost 17 kilometres, and it's incredibly difficult. It was used identically in the Donegal Harvest in 2015, but it is as tough as it gets. So if someone had to take 10 seconds off somebody, if they took their brain out, it's there. It's the infamous stage where Andrew Nesbitt had his off years ago, where a couple of cars ran into him after, I think back in 2005 or 2006, in the opposite direction. So it has been used, but it definitely isn't getting any easier.
No, absolutely not. And you can draw a breath now, my friend. I felt like you were driving the stages as you were taking us through them. So
yeah.
Obviously,
you're familiar with them.
You're doing Facebook Live, so you're going to be doing the stage end stuff from the event. Have you cast an eye at, dare I say, the W word, the weather word?
Yeah, I just had a look there. Tomorrow, it looks like there's going to be a drizzle of rain about 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, like a minimal. And then it's shown no rain for Saturday and Sunday, but it's shown it very, very cloudy. So who knows, particularly in the coastal areas there around Knockalla or up in Sunday's coastal stages. Weather can be often different there than what the forecast says.
Another big part of these events for me as well is there's such a huge kind of following with regard to the modified class. Obviously, we've seen David Bogie forfeit going to Ypres to go across and take his all singing, all dancing Mark II escort over to do this one. But there's so many, the Starlets, there's so many Darians and things like that. Runners and riders, I suppose, in the modified section.
No, I think we'd definitely go over the time if we mentioned everybody. But yeah, like last year's winner, actually sponsor of the rally is Ian Barrett. Ian came last year pretty much his first time in Donegal and won the national section, which is pretty much unheard of. But since then, in his Darien, he's only completed about 9 stages on events. So I don't think he's finished a rally since. So it was incredible that the car kept going for 3 days last year. So I know he's put a lot of time and preparation into it for this event, particularly from Carlo. He had a non-finish. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes. He'll be there or thereabouts. Another guy there is James Stafford in another Darien. James is from Wexford, never did Donegal before, but James can drive anything fast and can go anywhere fast. So like judging by what he's winning the national sections of the one-day rallies here this year, like he's beaten like the Escorts and Corollas and stuff by almost a minute in a one-day event. So, I mean, that's pretty much unheard of. So he's going to be very, very strong. Then you have Kevin Gallagher, who actually builds the engines. He's another Darien, and he lives on Knockalla stage. He was thereabouts with Ian Barrett last year. There was only 20-odd seconds between them there for most of the event. And then you have your Escorts, you know, David Bogie, Gary Kernan. The list goes on. You couldn't even begin to name them. There's so many strong competitors entered. It's just going to be, it's a war of attrition too. You know, it's all going to be, there could be a guy in 10th place in the national section tomorrow evening within 30 or 40 seconds of the lead, and he could end up winning it on Sunday evening because it's such a grueling, tough, demanding event on man and machine.
You mentioned Escorts. Do we dare not mention the Block Effect?
Yeah, I got carried away there. I nearly forgot about him. But
I know.
It's absolutely fantastic to see Ken Block over here. I think it can only do good for Irish Rally, and it can only do good for Irish tourism. He's 4 million Instagram followers there. He's putting up pictures, and I think it's just fantastic to have him here. You know, he's into his, Gymkhanas and all that. I think he is a good driver. He's done some good things in the WRC. He's not a world-class driver, but I think he is a good fish there. He's coming over to enjoy it. He's in his Escorts, Escort Cosworth's Class 20 car. How will he go in the race? I know, like he was saying, top 10. I'd say, yeah, it's realistic. If the car keeps going, I think he'll be there or thereabouts in the top 10 in the national section. But I think it's going to take him. I think, like, even no matter who comes here, it takes them with setup the first day to settle in. Even when Loeb came here in 2007, it took him the first day to get to sort of find his bearings. And I think Block will be the same. I don't expect anything special out of him tomorrow or on Friday, but it'll be interesting. But it's great to have him here, and it's great to have the new fans coming and more followers following Irish Rallying.
I was just about to say it because there's been videos put out of the tests and stuff like that, and you've just been talking about the Instagram thing and things like that, and which I completely get. I guess what we all want though is to see that new blood of fan coming through as well. So hopefully we will see some new faces out on the stages, even if it is just for the Ken Block Effect.
That's it. You know, there could be people there that mightn't have, they could be into drifting, or they could be into, his videos more so than rallying, but they actually go and experience Donegal, and there's no better rally to experience. They might go and get their rally license and begin competing themselves. But I can't see any negatives to having them here. I think it's just fantastic, and I hope he has a good run. I hope the car makes it to the finish.
Me too. Now, if we can just get back to the main event, as it were, so the R5 runners who are trying to secure championship points. I suppose, mathematically, looking at the championship table, Killian, Craig Breen has got an 18-point lead. Now I know he wants to win Donegal. We talked about that, of course, at the beginning of this section. But he's got a little bit of breathing space, hasn't he? Almost. He's got that little bit of breathing space, and now is the time to do it.
He has. He can drop a score, and this is a drop score. And if he just continues on where he left off in the Ulster, I mean, he should win the championship.
Yeah.
But again, for the championship perspective, at least it leaves it a bit more open that he is missing a round. At least, guys don't abandon the championship and say, well, here, listen, we can't win it now. We're not going to finish it out.
Yeah.
So it's actually helping the championship that he is leaving it for one event, I would say.
I think so too. Alistair Fisher, 18 points behind, and then 18 points behind him is Desi Henry, and then a couple of points behind him, Callum Devine, and then you've got Josh Moffat and Johnny Greer. You know, you'd like to think, I think Johnny Greer will still be there or thereabouts come the end of the season. You know, Desi Henry, is he out on this one?
Desi's in the Fiesta. So he's going to go well in the overall terms as well. He was out in Cavan a few weeks ago, and he went okay. He's small little problems that, unfamiliarity with the car, but he's still in a nice run, and he's familiar with the Donegal stages. So guys seem to up their game for this event. Even Manus Kelly did a few warm-up events over the last couple of years. Like, he wasn't at the strong end of things in the warm-up event, and then bang, come the Friday morning first stage in Donegal, he's right on it. So you can't discount anyone, and even the likes of Craig, I think... that probably he won't get as much of a race in the World car as he did in the R5 car. I could be completely wrong, but I think Craig will be have a more comfortable advantage, I would say, in the WRC car rather than the R5.
Well, let's see. Our listeners all over the world, obviously, are getting sucked into the enthusiasm that we have for Irish Tarmac. Obviously, what you're bringing to us as well on the stage ends. What's the best way of our guys following, Killian?
So if they go onto my Facebook page, which is On The Pace Note, they'll find us on Facebook. We basically do a mixed match of action and stage ends, but we follow every single stage. If they go online, they'll be able to see our broadcast times. So we run close enough to them all weekend. We've actually, Thursday evening, this evening, we have a preview show going out at 7 p.m. where we'll analyse the runners and riders, and then each evening we'll be talking to the drivers, and they'll be able to get a timescale of when we're going live, and even set a notification, so whenever we do go live, they'll get a notification on their phone. They'll just click it, and they'll be able to follow every single stage live over the weekend. And as I said, we tell the story, and we don't just do the top crews, we do all the crews, but generally I follow the top 15 or 20. And then I move between stages, and then Andy, who does it with me, waits at the end of, say, each stage before service and books everyone. So no matter who they're following, they should be able to follow them on the Pace Note Facebook page.
Fantastic. Well, listen, I hope the W word stays good for you. I never like mentioning it. I don't like to jinx things. So I hope the weather stays good for you anyway. Killian, listen, mate, we'll get you back again soon. Folks, we're going to go to a little break, and then we're going to do the Keel of the Young Guns. We've got Jude Lepley coming up, and then Tom Williams to finish.
This is Absolute Rally.
Quarter, mid-lift crest, 86 right, minus, tightens over jump, opens over 50, sharp left, tightens 5-6 over left crest, over 70, 5 right.
Ireland's leading commercial note supplier, Killian Duffy, has joined forces with 2016 British Rally champion Craig Parry to form On The Pace Note UK. For more information, visit the website onthepacenote.co.uk.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. As you know, we're doing, we do quite a lot with Kielder as it is, but we've been doing the whole Kielder Young Guns thing. We've got Tom Williams coming up a little bit later on, going to tell us all about Sardinia. But another man who's been, to be fair, he's been putting in some decent stakes times. That's an understatement. If you're not familiar with George Lepley, I'm pretty certain you soon will be. He's been absolutely on it for the last 2 years. In the National Gravel Championship over in the UK, the BTRDA series, was in an R2 Fiesta last year where he handed me my arse on a plate. And this year he's decided to go historic. He's gone rear wheel drive, and he's doing that to other people as well. So welcome for the first time, George, to Absolute Rally.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for welcoming me.
It's great to have you on. It's also nice the fact that you've got birds tweeting in the background. It's always nice to know that you're out in the countryside when you speak to us.
Yeah, I think... No one likes rally cars, so at least birds do.
At least, yeah, that's it. If you're into bird watching, somebody, studio at absoluterally.co.uk, tell us what that bird is. Anyway, George, listen, mate, you've been on this kind of rise over the last couple of years. Obviously, the Lepley name is synonymous in the UK for many, many years with rallying. Last year and the year before, you went with the Fiestas and you tried to do the modern thing. You dominated the R2s. You didn't have much luck with the ST, it has to be said. Now, I may drop your dad in the ear. He always thought you were hard on the ST.
Yeah, I think he did. But I think when he actually came to watch some of the Inca, I think he was quite surprised, actually. So I think, like you say, we were just very unlucky when it came to driving the ST. Obviously, they're Group N, and we had too many mechanical failures really to register in the championship. So, but yeah, like you say, we did do some very good stage times. Well, I think we're the most fast stage times in the ST championship that year. But yeah, just let down with the mechanical problems. But they went to the R2, and I'd say that's probably more like a Group A car, if you want to call it that. A bit more manly, or the drive just a bit more beefy and all the rest of it. And yeah, I mean, we were fortunate. We had no mechanical issues and, yeah, came away with 6 wins from 6. So couldn't really have gone any better.
Do you think it suited at all? I was going to ask you a question. Do you think it suited you more? We'll talk about where you are and what you're doing this year and what you're hoping to do as well very shortly. But did it suit you? Because, you know, listen, cards on the table, obviously, we did the same championship as you last year. And there was loads of times where I looked at it and thought, yeah, I've gone well there. And then I looked at your times and it was like, I'm clearly not even in the same league at the moment. Did you just feel like you clicked with the car? Was it just one of those cars that you just felt just immediately under you? This is it. This is what it's all about.
Yeah, like you say, we did have some really good times last year. I don't really think there was too many bad ones. I mean, there was the odd one. But yeah, the car, as in the R2 car, just such a nice chassis, the Fiesta. Again, it's not massively overpowered. It's probably a bit underpowered. So it just gives you that bit of extra almost thinking time. So going to down the straights into the corners, to can try and maximise everything. And my progression from the STs is a nice stepping stone. The main difficulty, I guess, from the ST to the R2 car is probably the camminess. For all those people who have driven the R2 600 at about 4,500 revs is a bit of a dead spot, but you just got to keep them singing. But once you're up there, then yeah, they drive like a dream. There's no nasty vices. There's really nothing bad about them. They are really nice to drive. You just soon get frustrated about not going fast enough, if you want to say that.
Now, obviously, you know, you ticked all the boxes last year that was required of you, and this is what, you know, all young drivers kind of do. I don't think there is a ladder anymore, George. You know, years ago it was kind of, you know, you kind of work your way up and everything else. I think you've kind of got to think outside of those boxes now, and what you're driving this year definitely takes it in that direction, where you've decided, or rather you were put in a position where you needed to go with a historic car. Just tell our listeners perhaps what happened. You dominate a national championship in an R2 car. The natural progression, everybody thought, well, we'll see George do British Championship or this or that. What happened?
Okay, so yeah, just starting back from the start of that question, the natural ladder progression that you might have seen back in sort of the late 80s and the 90s with all the Peugeot Cup and all the rest of it seems to have gone nowadays, and it's much more difficult to sort of follow that ladder progression, especially when you're trying to do it with a limited budget, let's say that. Of course, I'd love to do what the likes of, you know, Tom Williams, fellow Kilda driver, is doing. And don't get wrong, I do watch all his times and all the rest of it all the time, while he's doing his events and not out in Sardinia and all the rest of it. Obviously, we had a great year last year, like you say, in the sort of British National Championship, in the R2. And couldn't have gone much better. And obviously, winning the two-wheel drive class against much more powerful machinery, yeah. The ladder progression, I guess, that you'd think of would be to go and do the British Championship in an R2 car, and that's what we had set up for this year. But just literally a month before the Cambrian, which was the opening round of both the British Championship and the BTRDA, just budget fell through, and it was literally, we literally cancelled the entry about a month ago. So I thought that was kind of it, and I thought I'm going to have to focus on doing some university work and pick up the pieces sort of after my final exam. So I thought, you know, it's a few months away and then I'll be able to get back out rallying. But it was, I think it was 2 weeks or less than 2 weeks before the first rally. Local businessman to me, that's Jordan, and he came round and just asked what I was doing. I told him, you know, everything just fell through last minute and we won't be the Cambrian, but we'll probably go and watch and all the rest of it. And he very kindly said, I can't have you doing that. And yeah, he lent me his lovely Avenger. So he started off as a sort of a go and try and do the Cambrian and enjoy it and see what happens. And we're actually in the trainer's Hillman Avenger, 2 litre, 8-valve Brazilian engine. And yeah, at the end of the rally, we'll first two-wheel drive, first historic. And it was sort of like, wow, can't believe we've just done that. So he was very excited and went from that rally to the Malcolm Wilson. Icy conditions, snowy, all the rest of it. Middle of Greiter and all the rest of it. And although it was a bit freaky at times, thinking drums went off the car and I've only done 40 miles in this thing. We came to the end of that rally. Like we had a couple of issues, but we came to the end of that rally and we won again, first two-wheel drive and first historic. Crikey. So then we went to the BRM engine, actually. Buzz thought, yeah, it would be good to get that engine out because he has the rights to that one. He bought the rights to it. And, yeah, we then did the rallying up stages with the BRM. So it's 2 litre, 16-valve. I guess Chrysler's version of the BDA. And, yeah, to go out and showcase that was amazing. Again, first two-wheel drive and first historic, so we couldn't ask much more. And then we went onto the planes and did it once more. So 4 from 4 in the two-wheel drive and the historic category and the junior section of the BTRDA. So, yeah, I guess it's not the natural progression, but it's gone from, well, Baz said, I'll come and support you and you can have a go on this rally and see what happens. And it's just progressed from there. But now it's, we're 4 rallies in, we've won 4 from 4, and now the dream sort of, well, our perspective and his is, I wonder if we could try and win the Silver Star Championship on the Nicky Griss. So I'm sure we need 5 scores. So that would be a perfect ending for his saviour to my rallying this year.
I think it's a great story in some ways. It's simply because you're going from a front wheel drive to a rear wheel drive car. And I suppose, you know, we have people obviously compete, listen to the podcast. We have co-drivers. We have people who are involved in running cars and stuff, but we also have fans. So going from that front wheel drive to historic rear wheel drive, from a driving point of view, how natural or unnatural was it for you? Because you're a young man, you know, you're not used to driving a rear-wheel drive car day by day. That's what everybody used to have, and you know, everybody was kind of used to it. You know, it's quite a unique thing these days to find young people driving rear-wheel drive cars on a road. But in terms of rallying, what techniques or what changes did you have to make to your driving style, having been, you know, front-wheel drive all the way through your career to date?
Yeah, like you say, being front wheel drive all your way through your career and then jumping into the rear wheel drive, it's quite a change, and it does take quite a bit of adapting, to be honest. But I think the biggest thing was, okay, you're now rear wheel drive and more power than I've had before in the STs and the R2. It's very easy just to go into the corner and go sideways. And as much fun as that is, it certainly isn't the fastest way. I think probably by midway to end of the Malcolm Wilson, I started to get the hang of it and really got to think about where your back wheels are this time as opposed to where the front wheels are. All the way through your career, you're trying to get your front wheels in the best line and sort of let the back wheels do what they want almost. But this way, you've always got to concentrate on getting your front turned in and then back wheels on the best line for the exit. So, yeah, I mean, the terms sort of Scandinavian flick and all the rest of it come to mind a bit more. And if anything, it's probably made me think a bit more about my lines, because now I'm considering front and rear wheels when you're going around the corners. Front wheel drive car, I guess you consider the front wheel drive the front wheels a bit more. But yeah, it has been certainly very challenging, but I've thoroughly enjoyed every minute of it. So yeah, I look forward to the Nicky Griss, to be honest.
Well, you can tell. I suppose if, and it's a big if, and we'll touch wood and we'll do all those other things, you get your perfect score, Nicky Grist. What happens next for George? Because that's the question which I suppose a lot of people are starting to ask now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Nicky Grist is, I guess, it's quite early, I guess, for the BTR day. It's almost, if you want to call it, halfway point through the season, maybe. So, big touch wood, all goes to plan, and we get the score that we need. What happens? Even I'm not sure after that, to be honest. We are talking to two or three people, and I'm sure we'll see something. Like I mentioned before, sort of, although the natural ladder of progression, you want to call it that, is difficult to follow. I'd love to do sort of BRC, junior WRC, WRC 2. That's probably what I dream about each night. But realistically, I have to try and make the best from what I have. I would like to do junior BRC and the R2s, but without sort of a plan to do the junior world championship the year after, I'm not sure there's much point. But I think without a big supporter to do that, I will, to be honest, try and look for a shot in four-wheel drive, maybe in some British championship, let's put it that way.
Okay.
Obviously, like you say before, done the BTRDA. Touch wood, we could make it rear-wheel drive and front-wheel drive. So that would be the Silver Star front and rear-wheel drive. So if you want to stick them together, I guess you get four-wheel drive and maybe Gold Star. But yeah, time will tell.
Okay. Interesting times. I suppose you obviously we've spoke many times, and I've spoke to your old man many times as well. You seem quite feet planted on the ground of this might happen. If not, then we'll go and do this and we'll go and win four-wheel drive. I suppose the dream is still there to try and make a profession out of it, but you know probably better than most. You've grown up around the sport. It's such an incredibly narrow window of opportunity, isn't it?
Yeah, like you say, I've been growing up around it, and moving karting and all the rest of it, and obviously it's difficult to go from a clubman all the way up the ranks without a supporter, other than quite a large financial backing from yourself. We've seen it. It does happen. You can spend sort of everything you've got on it and not make it. And it's a big risk. And I think reality steps in. Although I still dream about it every night, I've become a professional driver and I have done ever since I was about one, I think. it probably sort of gets away from you, but I'm certainly not giving up, and I'm trying to make everything of every opportunity that arises in front of me. And if I do think there's genuinely a possibility, then I will be jumping at this chance. Don't get me wrong, but yeah, you do have to be realistic in this thing, because bills soon add up, let's put it that way.
You can spend it and spend it again and spend it again. But still, listen, George, thanks for coming on as part of the Kiel the Young Guns feature. We are going to talk to your Kiel the colleague, as you called him before, Tom Williams, before the end of the programme. But listen, we'll keep everything crossed for you, George, and we'll get you back and we'll talk to you again before the end of the season, okay?
That's perfect. Thanks very much, Tony.
This is Absolute Rally with Kielder. Whether it's the car, the service, the tools, the mechanics matter.
There's 15 more seconds to fill.
That's it, Tony. Car sounds?
Welcome back to the second to last final section, because we've just had George Lepley, of course, talking about the Kiel the Young Guns. The other Kiel the Young Gun that we made reference to during that piece, of course, is Tom Williams, friend of the show, always comes on, always at an airport. Tom Williams, where are you?
I'm in Heathrow Airport.
Of course you are, Tom.
I just live in the airport at the moment.
Do you remember that? It was a film called with Tom Hanks in, who ended up getting stranded in an airport where he just literally lived there for a period of time.
Yeah, I can't think what it's called.
Yeah, I can imagine. Tom, it's great to have you. You're obviously flying off somewhere hot and exotic. That's fair to say.
That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Hopefully,
okay.
I can tell everybody what I'm going to do in the next few days. But yeah, it'll be good news.
Okay, good stuff. Good stuff. Well, listen, I wanted to catch up with you with regards to Sardinia, and of course, we're kind of at that halfway point of the season. Sardinia was.
Yeah.
Was an event which I was watching, obviously, from afar. I was watching what you were doing. I was watching what some of the other guys were doing as well. Tyre preservation was a massive thing, I think, for everybody, or maybe not everybody, but certainly for you. I've seen some images, what you put up, even at the end of day one. Just with regards to the tyres, Tom, just how many tyres do you get? What's your tyre allocation for a WRC round?
We have 22 tyres, and we have about 16 hard compounds and... 6 to 8 soft medium compounds. So we just got to have a bit of a balance for the rally.
Right, and I'm guessing that the soft compounds only come out, or the medium compound only come out when you've run out of hards in Sardinia.
Yeah, that's it, that's it. And it was so hot. I haven't done a rally. It was hotter than Mexico or any of the other events. It was over 40 degrees on Friday, and I thought my mind was going to blow up on some of the stages.
Wow. The tyre wear, which I witnessed, you know, kind of down to canvas and stuff like that, we're used to seeing, I suppose, on four-wheel drive cars quite a lot. It's not something we're used to seeing necessarily on two-wheel drive cars.
No.
Just with regards to kind of managing your tyres, I know obviously what your strategies are this year, and maybe our listeners don't, but you very much went with trying to look after both the car and the tyres because the event was so rough.
Yeah, for sure. We thought we had a very different plan to what actually happened on the rally. It was going to be very cautious, and after seeing the recce, we were going to be very preserving the car. The amount of people telling me how rough the rally was going to be, and then all the heat as well. So we were really ready. We knew exactly what we were doing, and we had a good test, and we had everything ready to go. And then it was very different on the rally when we got there, because a lot of the stages were cancelled. So it was actually not all the cars went through. So it was only a one pass on a few of the stages, and it was a lot smoother than we thought. And I was also using the softer tyres on the rear of the car, but they just turned to jelly as soon as I put them on the car. So that was, and I had to keep on swapping them. So eventually I had to swap the tyres back to front just because I was running out on the first loop. And that's when I had that picture where it was down to the canvas on the front.
Just with regards to that, again, for our listeners who may not be aware, when you've got those tyres on the back, it just feels like you've got a puncture, doesn't it? It just feels horrible. The car feels washy on the back.
I can, and also the clicks as well. It was so hot that all the suspension clicks I did, it was so hot that it was making the oil so much more thinner. So I had all the clicks I did felt 5 clicks softer than when I tested. So everything felt like a bit of a boat to start with, and having the soft tyres, and it was really hard to keep the car in a straight line. And once, which was a bit of a struggle in the morning, but in the afternoon, we just completely overhauled the car, changing all the setup, making it a lot stiffer, harder compound tyres, and that was a better feeling.
That gives you a bit more confidence as well, doesn't it? That's the first place to go when confidence is washing away from you, is stiffen the car up so it's not washy.
Lot more accurate. But then it was a lot smoother than I thought. Everyone was saying how rough it was going to be, a lot more smooth, the rally. So we could have pushed a lot harder in places. But obviously there were places on the event where you had to completely back off and go 10 miles an hour just to get through the rocks. But then you've got to suddenly change your mentality to go back to 100 again, just unchange this all through the stage.
The thought process and I suppose notes and things like that when you are only doing one pass of those days, when you're writing your notes at the moment, Tom, if you know you're, you know, again, this is something when you're at the back of the field in the juniors, because all the four-wheel drive cars go through, and that's the R5s, the World Rally cars and everything else. When you're writing your notes, do you write your notes specifically for those conditions, or do you try and plan ahead and think, well, at least I know this stage is going to cut, or I know this stage is going to be, you know, people are going to be pulling rocks. I'm not going to be able to take that line. I'm going to have to take the cuts to WR cars. Go, how do you write your notes? How do you plan ahead for stuff like that?
Well, that's what I would usually do now, because it's helped me so much, especially doing it Sweden and Corsica. Even though I find it harder, the surfaces being snow and tarmac, I've done the events before and I knew exactly where and what the stages would be like, but Sudden was the first one for me, so I didn't have the previous experience to know which stage would do what. And unfortunately, we thought it was going to be a lot more rough, especially from what a lot of people were saying. And we got there, and I thought it was a lot smoother. We could have pushed a lot harder and had a better strategy. So this is something we learned. I really, really enjoyed the rally. It's such a great event. But now we know, and I think we could have pushed a lot harder.
Well, consistency was there, Tom. You know, obviously, the stage times and what your position and you kind of held station. Was there a strategy as well? Is to kind of see, and I know, obviously, what happened to you a bit further down the line. Did you think that maybe some more people may have had issues which enables you to pinch a few places here and there?
Yeah, there was definitely. Well, it just shows, firstly, on this event, it was one of the classic hard events. Nearly all of us finished the rally. We thought, usually, last time they did Sardinia, I think, well, in the juniors when Craig Green was doing it, they were saying there were 20 juniors, and I think 9 juniors broke down on one corner.
Wow.
Everybody was saying this, and out of 12 juniors on this event, 12 got to the last day, and only two of us retired. And throughout the whole weekend, no one had any drive shaft problems. The car was so much stronger. They weren't changing beams or bottom arms. All they were doing was spanner checks, oils, all the classic things, and the car was so much more stronger, and which Matic was very happy about. And it was really good for the team.
Very happy until he got to Monday morning and realised he wasn't sending out a load of invoices to people.
He didn't in the morning. Yeah, that was a tough morning on that Sunday. We had all sorts of problems. First one, we accidentally went into the back of another car on the stage, which was gone off in a bit of a funny position. And we accidentally tapped the back of him. And then we lost third gear on the following stage. And then just to finish it off on the final stage, we went through the finish line. And the sump shattered, but the sump guard was okay.
Wow.
So that was a hard day.
So is that just because the sump perhaps is so close to the sump guard? Is that what the energy's been going up?
I think so, because the sump guard was okay, but because it's a standard sump on the car. Yeah. It's a standard sump, so it would, you can't really change that because of the homologation, the rules, and keeping the budget down on there too.
Yeah. I seen obviously the images of you guys rolling around underneath the sump off and stuff like that. Obviously you have your toolkit with you, you have your Keel, the buzz gun, you have all these things with you that enable you to do these jobs. But when you took the sump off, was it one of those moments where you just went, why did they even bother taking this off?
I just couldn't believe it happened at first. We finished the rally we finished the rally and then I just suddenly a yellow light came on. I was like, okay, it's just a yellow light, and it suddenly starts to turn red, and then all the oil pressure light came on, and then my heart sank a bit then.
Yeah.
And I was so lucky to have that Keel going, so I used it so much, undoing everything. I was doing all the wheels, just to get some ground clearance, because I was trying to get the jack high enough, and I spent about 20 minutes under the car, and when I took the sump off, the biggest hole was on the sump, and it had a crack going all the way up to the block, which was a bit of a heartbreaking moment.
Yeah.
And it was just oil was flooding out, but we managed to save a lot of the oil coming out in a tray. And I was doing all sorts of stuff just to block the hole. I managed to rip up the sump foam pad, and I put that in there, and I put clay and bandages and all sorts of stuff out of my medical bag just to block it all up. And we managed to do it, and I put the oil back in, and we got pressure in the engine, which was a bit of a relief. And then we were driving on the road section of about 10, 15K, and that was going really well. Just trying to go through all the traffic on the road section, trying to make time back. And but unfortunately, the engine got hot again, and it all fell back out again. And I was really running out of time.
Right.
And I was doing a bit of begging on the side of the road.
I suppose there's the other thing is as well, you've got to think about saving the engine as well at that point. That's where you know, you've got to kind of make a decision. There's a decision to be made, and it's not one that you want to make, but it's one that you have to make.
Yeah, it was a really, really tough decision that. But if I had another day after that, obviously you have to save the engine because you just retire and you get the penalty to come back tomorrow. But it was the final road section to the podium, so there wasn't another day. And but if it was a real, you would do it. It was to win the championship.
Yeah.
You'd do anything to blow the engine up to just get there, but it wasn't worth it. We need the budget to get to the end of this year, and we were running out of time. It was worth it, but we tried our hardest.
Yeah. Now, you just mentioned about the championship and, of course, this year. We find ourselves now at the midway point of not only the full-blown championship, but also the juniors. Obviously, it's you've got Finland and then GB, and that's the end of it. You've got a bit of downtime now. Reflecting back on the championship so far, what would you give yourself out of 10, Tom?
That's probably a bit hard on myself. But this championship so far is going really well. I feel so much more confident last year driving. And just on our graph, seconds a kilometre, we've had a huge progression on all surfaces. And now we've just got to really step up the intensity going into Finland, a bit of a smoother rally, and just keep the progression going. There's a lot of work to do, so I'll just say about 10.
Sorry, we lost you for a second there. Go on, give me your out of 10 again.
5 out of 10.
5 out of 10. You are hard on yourself, aren't you, Tom?
Yeah, a lot of homework to do for Finland.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll get your best overall at the end of the championship. But as I say, it is year two for you. You are kind of moving on. You've moved into the new car. There's new rivals there and stuff like that. But with regards to Finland and GB, you've done both of those events before. So did you go there with added confidence? You've done them before, but again, we're in another new car as well, aren't we? You know, you mentioned the new car is fantastic, but you know, is it starting again almost?
No. Obviously driving the car is, but, and we'll make new notes again, but it's when you go back to an event, it's so much easier. You just feel a lot more happy because you know where everything is. You know roughly what the stage is still like, and it just gives you a bit of confidence compared to going into a new event, which is always a bit more nerve-wracking. So, yeah, we feel really happy going into it. I've got a lot of work to do, and it's the big gap in between now to Finland, and we'll work hard on our pave notes. But it's also the competition this year is just relentless. It's with this new prize of getting given an R5 and tyre and fuel packages, everybody's turned up to win this, and people are just going to the biggest length to win this championship. So it's really great to be up against the best drivers in the world, and it's better to be 6th out of the 10 best than 1st out of 3, not very good.
Yeah, no, good on you. Well, to stay match fit, we will be seeing you at Goodwood, won't we?
Yeah, that's it. That's the next event, Goodwood for us, which will be more of a relaxed event, but it's very good for sponsors and showing people what rallying's about.
What are we playing in at Goodwood, Tom? Are we allowed to say?
Yeah. We'll be driving a Fiesta R5 with Don Buckley, which will be very exciting.
Would that be the one that you and I went out in?
Yeah, that's so fun. Be back and back to four-wheel drive, have a go.
Good man.
The best car in the world.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Tom, you've got a flight to catch. And we do appreciate your time. Tom will be joining us again, of course, probably around Rally Finland. Folks, this has been episode 10, season 16, so we're going to have a few weeks off. We've got a cracker to come back with, by the way. We're going to be doing some pre-records throughout those 2 weeks to bring you some really, really top guests for the new season in season 17. We thank Kielder for their support. Without them, we wouldn't be here. Keep spreading the love, keep spreading the word. If you can rate, review and share about, it's always appreciated. But we'll be back same time, same place in your little podcast hole in a few weeks' time.
Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.